Welcome back to another edition of Talk Nerdy to Me. I'm your host, Troy Stegner, and I am speaking with Mr. Keith Champagne, who is in space.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Greetings from space.
That kind of fits since you did a lot of Green Lantern writing, drawing, inking, coloring. I mean, you've done pretty much everything, every facet of the comic book creation. What part was your, which one of those jobs is your favorite?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, working in comics, it helps to be a jack of all trades. I mean, the more things that I can do, the more avenues I have to make money. And as much as I love comics, I do have kids and it is a job. So I have to, you know, I got to put them through college someday. Of all of the various things that I do, I tend to enjoy the writing the most. I feel drawing for me is very frustrating. I spend a lot of time pulling my hair out over the drawing and inking. You know, inking is fun, but it can be tedious. Coloring, I'm never happy with the way it looks. But I enjoy writing. I like the mental aspect of it, the jigsaw puzzle aspect of the characters falling into place with the story. It's just the most creatively satisfying to me. It makes me think and it keeps me on my toes.
Great. Did you write the Ghostbusters Other Side? Was that you writing?
Yeah, I did. I wrote that, and my friend Tom was the artist on that project. And I've never been happy with that one. Like, I feel like at the time, I was doing a lot of writing for DC, and IDW contacted me and gave me a few options of projects to write. And I was like, yeah, let me try Ghostbusters. And I don't feel like I don't think I took it seriously enough, which is a funny thing to say when you're writing like a more of a comedy property. But it was just something to kill time in between like scripts I was writing for DC. And I don't think I put enough effort into it. I was never thrilled with how that came out. And I made a huge mistake. I took Venkman off the board in that early. And then the series loses something without Venkman. It loses a lot of the humor. And in hindsight, I should have kept Venkman going through the whole series.
Well, maybe we'll get lucky and they'll call you back to do some more Ghostbuster stuff and you can write a script you do like.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've talked to them a couple of times over the years and they were like, yeah, we'll call you. Sure. my phone doesn't ring. And the Ghostbusters fans I found very passionate about that property. In terms of, you know, if the artist had drawn one of the proton packs a little bit off, like they were on top of that, pointing that out like immediately. You know, I should go and read that again. It's been 10 years since I've even looked at it. I should see if it's better than what I remember it being.
Well, you'll always be your own worst critic, so it's probably not as bad as you're making it out to be.
Yeah, well, you're nice. Who knows? That's true. I mean, it's hard to be happy with anything.
Well, we have a El Paso Ghostbusters group, so I'm sure, and I'm actually part of it. So we'll let you know about it when we get there.
They better not bully me when I get to the show.
No, it's a good group of guys.
Yeah. I did meet Ernie Hudson through that gig, and I got to chat with him at a show years ago, and he was a nice guy. So it's a lemons lemonade thing right there.
So what do you think about the new Ghostbusters? Or is it supposed to come out later this year?
I'm kind of excited for it. I never got to see. I was when the all-female Ghostbusters reboot came out. I had surgery on my leg, and I was laid up, and I couldn't get to the theater, and I just never got around to watching it. So for me, that reboot never happened. And so this to me, this will be the real. And I'm not saying that like it's bad because I haven't seen it. I can't judge, but it just doesn't exist for me. And then, so this is my first real reboot with the Ghostbusters. And I like Jason Reitman as a director. I think he's really smart. And he's done some movies that I really adore. And I kind of like the legacy aspect that they've shoehorned into it seems like. So I have high hopes for it. I think this could be the one that kind of restores that franchise to the glory it needs to be.
Yeah, I didn't hate the all-female Ghostbusters, but it's if it was on TV and I was clicking through the channels, I think I would just keep clicking. It's one of those, if you've seen it once, you're good.
Yeah, Yeah, that's yeah. My older son saw it, and he was like, "Yeah," and he was only like 12 at the time. But he was like, "Yeah, you don't need to see it."
Meh. Yeah. You'd mentioned being laid up with your leg. Did you want to talk any about the Hero Initiative?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm always happy to pimp out the Hero Initiative for all the good work that they do. long story short, excuse me, I have a cold. A few years ago, I was in a hiking accident where I basically fell off a mountain. I was hiking with my family, and I wrecked my leg. And so when I, you know, it was a long recovery process. And, you know, I got back. We were in New Hampshire at the time, and when I got home, like a day later, my phone rang, and it was Jim McLaughlin from the Hero Initiative. Like, hey, we heard about your accident. You know, is there anything we can do to help? And I was on drugs at the time, so not thinking clearly, but also
prescribed drugs.
Yeah, prescribed drugs. But also not realizing what a long recovery I had in front of me. And I kind of dismissed it like, hey, you know, thanks for calling, but I'm fine. I'll be out of my seat in no time. Then come to find out that it was going to be a much longer ordeal than I had hoped. And as a freelancer, if I'm not able to work, I'm not able to earn. And it didn't take long for my family to burn through the money that we had saved up. And next thing you know, I called Jim back and I was like, listen, I'm going to need some help to get through this. And they were, you know, no questions, no hesitation. You know, within a couple of days, they had sent me enough money to keep the lights on and to, and, you know, to keep my kids fed. And it's amazing the work that they do. And I'm, you know, compared to all the people that they help, I'm a very minor piece of that history. I mean, they've given substantial help to other creators in need. But it's good to know that there's a safety net out there in dire circumstances. And nobody likes to ask for help. Like, it's always kind of stings to have to turn to someone for help. But there's no judgment. There's, you know, nothing but love and acceptance. And how can we help you from that group? And they're wonderful. They're great people, and they do great work for this industry.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of people are only one bad medical accident away from catastrophe.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. I never even realized that until I had my one bad accident. And, you know, and even with the Hero Initiative's help, it still took me 3 years to pay off my medical debt. And, you know, it was two surgeries in 3 years to get back to square one on that. You know, it can be tough to be self-employed. I learned some good lessons from that I try to apply to my life now.
Yeah, like I said, Hero Initiative, good cause. I'll link them in the video description. So if people listening want to go and donate, you now know that it does go to helping people in need.
Yeah, I mean, just the way what they really did was they bought me time to heal, and they helped me to get more work when I was ready again. You know, they did some networking for me. And I can't say enough good about that group. So if you guys can support that group, you know, by all means, they deserve it.
Okay, on a lighter note, you've launched a few successful Kickstarters, and you've also worked for pretty much every major comics publisher out there. Which one do you prefer, and can you compare and contrast them for us?
In terms of, do I prefer Kickstarters to working for a publisher?
Yeah.
Excuse me again. Sorry, guys. Boy, I never really thought about it. I mean, actually, I just launched a Kickstarter this morning. And so I'm kind of watching it in real time off to the side here while I talk to you. But
go ahead and plug it. What is it?
Well, I work with Ominous Press, which is the Bart Sears, Ron Mars, Andy Smith company, as a project manager on the side. And so we pulled together a Kickstarter for their project Demigod. We're collecting that series into one complete package. Kickstarters are a lot of work, and they're super stressful. You know, when the campaign's up and running, it's basically a full-time job to keep track of it and to constantly strategize and adjust and think of ways to market. Working for a publisher is stressful. It's a constant process of, you know, meeting deadlines and networking, and so it's actually much the same. Basically, my whole life is stressful, is what I'm realizing.
Yeah, that's not just in comics.
Yeah, I think what Kickstarter is amazing with is that it's helping to launch a few creator-owned projects, and which is very tricky to get off the ground. You know, I can submit a proposal to a publishing company, and it might be 10 months before they even look at it. So that's 10 months that property is tied up, and I can't shop it anywhere else, so I can't do anything with it. So with Kickstarter, it's a 30-day process. At least I know within 30 days if I have something viable. You know, and so maybe Kickstarter. And there's freedom to it.
Yeah, you just have all the responsibility on you for the Kickstarter. But then again, if it's on you, you know it's going to get done.
Yeah, well, in theory. I mean, there were delays with my first campaign, definitely. That was a huge learning curve. But the second one was much smoother. And these ominous guys know what they're doing. They're very good at running these things, getting the rewards out and the books printed. Do you support a lot of Kickstarters, Troy?
I've ran one or two, and I supported a few here and there. A lot of comics and games Kickstarters.
Which ones have you run?
We self-published two comic books called Heirs. One of my ex-employees wrote it, and like you said, it was a real job just getting the Kickstarter done and getting everything finished and sent out.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's, you know, the sort of job where at midnight I'm laying in bed thinking, geez, what do I need to do tomorrow? How do I push this thing a little more?
Should I make another stretch goal? Yeah.
Yeah, it's always like, should I do another stretch goal? Which one of my friends can I call up and say, can you draw something for this campaign?
Yeah, that probably helps that you have friends in the business. We did not.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, you do now. I mean, you run your show and you know a lot of people. So you just pick up that Rolodex.
Yeah, but if I'm not bringing them into the con, a lot of times they won't answer the phone.
No. Those are shitty people then. You need better friends, right?
I need friends, period.
Don't be wrong.
Okay, you've worked on a bunch of different genres. I mean, you've gone from Green Lanterns to Ghostbusters to Stranger Things, even adolescent radioactive black belt hamsters. All those are completely different genres and mindsets. So how do you get into what's your muse, I guess, to get focused on that specific genre? How do you do that?
Well, I think, of all those genres, I love superheroes the most. I mean, that's my, you know, from going back to the time I was 3 years old, I fell in love with superhero comics. But no matter what the genre is, I think there has to be something relatable in the story that you're telling. It's something that the reader will hook into emotionally, no matter if it's in outer space or if it's in hell or if it's just two people walking down the street talking. There has to be something that the reader will, you know, relate to their own life and will be able to maybe feel along with the story, if that makes any sense. So I always try to ground whatever story I'm writing, you know, usually in something from my own life, whether it's an issue, like if I have an issue with my father or some life experience that I feel like I learned something from, you know, I'll try to mine that for its emotional resonance and then have the characters sort of transmit that to the reader and hope that they have experienced something similar and it all comes together, you know, kind of joins us in our hearts, which is pretty lofty for, you know, like a story about a guy with a power ring, but you know, you got to try, and maybe I fail more than I succeed, but if you don't try, you never make that connection with the reader.
Yeah. I think that's the problem with the superheroes. You try to show the human side of them for people to connect to. But how do you do that with somebody who has all these powers?
Yeah, well, you know what I always tell myself, and I have it written down next to my table, my writing table, is everybody comes from somewhere. So whether it's, you know, it's Darkseid or it's Doctor Doom or it's, you know, Green Lantern or Killer Frost or whatever character, at one point they were a child, and, you know, not knowing what they were going to grow up into. And I feel like if you just always remember that everyone starts the same, and no matter which way they diverge, we all have something in common at the very beginning. You know, like with Killer Frost, you know, she went to high school once, right? Like, she maybe was queen of the prom, or maybe she was the nerd in the back of the library. But those experiences are what turned her down the road to being Killer Frost. And you have to kind of mind that stuff a little bit, I think. And just remember that, you know, treat them like, I guess, treat the characters like people, who then become something extraordinary.
That's good advice. If you could work on any license, TV, comics, movies, whatever, which one would you pick?
Wow. So, okay. So my dream gig, like, of a licensed property, I'd like to do a sequel to Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon in comic book form.
Wow.
Like, I'm a huge Last Dragon fan. I'm a total nerd. I've watched the movie 100 times, if not 200. I know all the words to the Last Dragon theme song. I'll probably sing it for you in a second, but I would love to continue that story. You know, I print up Shogun of Harlem t-shirts and I sell them at shows just for fun, because I just love those characters in that world. So yeah, that's my dream, The Last Dragon.
Maybe you should talk to Tymok. I've interviewed him, and he wants to continue The Last Dragon story. So maybe there's something there. Get in contact with him.
There's something there. There's something there blocking it. And I don't know if it's a rights issue or what the problem is, but there's enough people. I mean, I'm not the only one that wants to do it. I'm going to be the one that ends up doing it, but I'm not the only one that does want to do it. But so the fact that it hasn't happened already means it's either a very expensive license to acquire, or there's some other kind of hitch in the process. I have talked to Tymok before. I don't know him very well. And, you know, and said, I'd like to try to get it off the ground. And he was, you know, down to help. You know, I mean, I see that guy enough at shows that, you know, we all sort of know each other a little bit. So, you know, knock on wood, we'll figure that one out eventually and get it off the ground.
Now, do you want to write it as a comic, a TV series, or a movie?
I want to do it as a comic. Yeah, I think a comic is the easiest way to continue the story. It's a less expensive way. You know, a TV series or a movie, you're talking millions of dollars. But with a comic, I mean, we could do it on Kickstarter for 30 grand and get it done. You know, and then they'll turn it into a TV or a movie from what we do.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. Last Dragon.
I love The Last Dragon. I mean, there's more that I would love to do, but that would be the top of the list, with The Last Dragon.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Bruce Leroy on the comic page.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he would be, you know, more or less the Obi-Wan role for The Last Dragon, and maybe take a young dragon under his belt or something, you know. But there's definitely a way to continue that story. There's something just magical about that cheesy 80s movie. I don't know what it is, but there's something mythical and magical about it.
Yeah, they work. Okay, I have one last question. This one's a little more serious. I ask this of everybody I interview. I don't know if you're going to need some time to think about this or not, so I'll just go ahead and pose the question to you. Cake or pie?
That is a tough one. Man, that's almost like one of those eternal questions where there's no right answer, but there is a wrong answer. I say pie.
Pie.
100%. Pie, 100%. I don't think you can beat, like, a banana cream pie, like a good banana cream, a good strawberry rhubarb pie, apple pie with ice cream. I think, you know, pound for pound, pie kicks cake's ass. Which isn't to say that cake's not tasty, because there's some good cakes out there, but if I could only have one, I'd go pie.
Yeah, you're in the majority. Most people do pick pie, and I agree with you on the rhubarb. I there's no better pie than rhubarb in my mind, so.
Oh, it's good stuff. Yeah, that's good stuff. So that's a tough. Ooh, man, that was a tough one.
Yeah, I try to leave the thought-provoking ones to the end. Well, Keith, like I said, I wanted to thank you for taking time out of your day and answering all our silly little questions. And I will let you go, and we'll see you in April at El Paso Comic Con.
Oh, I can't wait to get out to El Paso. I'm going to definitely get arrested while I'm there. So you guys get ready to bail me out after the show, my friends.
Yeah, just be careful about going to Juarez. I don't think we can bail you out over there.
All right. Thank you very much, Troy. Uh-huh.
Thank you, Keith.
We'll see you guys soon. Get nerdy with me. Tell me what game that you get on. Is it COD or Eve? What kind of class do you play, girl? In an RPG.